Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am Becky Friedman, and with me today is Ron John Benergie.
Hello, hello.
And Noel George.
Hey, everybody.
It's great to be here, and today we are going to be talking about vaccinations, and that seems like a kind of stranger thing for atheists to be talking about. You say, what does atheism have to do with vaccinations? But Ask an Atheist is dedicated to separation of church and state, humanism, atheism, and skepticism, and looking at vaccinations and some of the sort of political and personal,
nuances
surrounding these, this really kind of revolutionary thing that has happened to humanity. We've covered vaccines before. We've looked at some of the reasons why people have chosen to not vaccinate themselves or their children, and generally skeptics and scientists and people that come down on the side of science and looking at evidence-based practices in medicines are very much in favor of vaccinations. We do, though, have a story that is slightly alarming. And it goes like this. Catholic leaders in Kenya are calling for a boycott of tetanus vaccines. This comes to us from the BBC. The Catholic priests in Kenya have called for their congregations to boycott a tetanus vaccine campaign. A group of bishops called for the government to stop the campaign, claiming that it was a plot to sterilize women. Government officials assure the vaccine is safe and has been approved by the World Health Organization and UNICEF. Kenya, which is 40% Catholic, faces serious problems with tetanus, losing over 500 infants to the disease in the last year. So this is pretty alarming for a lot of folks.
And a big part of this, I mean, we were talking earlier about why we're talking about vaccination when vaccination is really a science thing, right? It's a medicine thing. And the insertion of Catholic leaders or Catholic priests or the Catholic church's leadership generally into medical matters around women's health, for example, or around reproductive health, around condom use, etc., is fairly common. And in the West, we're really familiar with that. And in particular, now in the U.S., with the continuous jihad, let's call it what it is, against Planned Parenthood, that seems to be continuously common. It's actually really interesting to see the Catholic Church come out against Catholic leaders to come out against vaccination, particularly in light of the fact that the Catholic Church has a very interesting position about vaccination. They themselves aren't against vaccination. They are, however, against the use of fetal tissue for the purposes of producing vaccines or for the purposes of doing research on vaccines. But that's more of an anti-choice issue and more of a life begins at conception issue. And when they've had the opportunity to clarify that position, they have never stuck with the concern about vaccinations. They have immediately pivoted to the use of fetal tissue is the only issue that they seem to fixate on with regard to vaccination. So,
and do we know whether tetanus is one of the lines of vaccines that is developed?
It is not. The only one that actually has been researched using the only one of the major vaccines that are part of the schedule of vaccines that we vaccinate everybody with that was using fetal tissue was rubella. And that was actually only in its research. The actual production of no vaccine actually uses fetal tissue in its production.
So to be clear, if you're giving your kid a vaccination, it's not as if you have any fetal tissue being injected. This is not.
We're going to say that over and over and over again. Fetal tissue is not used in the production of any vaccine globally, and that is a World Health Organization thing. It is a UNICEF thing. It is a CDC thing in the United States. It is a British national health thing. There is no fetal tissue used in the production of any vaccine.
Well, and it seems that in this article they're claiming that the vaccines pose a risk to mothers, to women, to reproductive organs. Is that that's my sense.
So this claim of, oh, don't get this vaccination, it's a plot to sterilize women, has terrible sort of echoes of things that have been suspected of or perpetrated on people in the past. We're looking at, you know, the legacy of ways to, I would guess, the worst ways to promote vaccination is to use them for alternate means other than to help ensure the health and safety of a population.
Right. And kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, I would say that the reason that we as atheists should care about this is not just because it's a kind of a separation between church and state issue, but also because atheists can be parents. I'm a parent of a four-year-old, and, you know, when thinking about whether my child is at school with unvaccinated children or so on and so forth, that's a risk to my child that I have to think about. So atheists can be parents. And also, it's not just the Catholic Church that has interfered with science on the basis of religious claims. It's also other organizations that have done that, other religious organizations.
Really good points, Noel. We do have a piece of good news regarding vaccinations, and that's the first malaria vaccine has been approved for use.
Yay!
European.
Actually, and it's a Seattle story, too, because the. Yeah, keep going.
So European drug regulators have approved the world's first malaria vaccine and have recommended its use in Africa. The drug, Mosquirix, is the first vaccine ever developed for a parasitic disease. The vaccine is only effective on 27 babies aged 6 to 12 weeks and 46% effective on babies 5 to 17 months old. The vaccine was developed by GlaxoSmithKline in partnership with the PATH Malaria Vaccine Initiative and also had funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I guess that's our Seattle connection.
That
here.
Is absolutely
Yay.
Our Seattle connection, but it's like this is number two, right? So the first one was polio that really was driven hugely by the Gates Foundation here in Seattle, and now we've got malaria, which is the second big thing.
So this is really an important thing and a really uplifting thing that we have malaria, which is hugely devastating to large populations around the world. But looking at this efficacy rate, it's hard to say, hey, 46%, you know, effective in kids this age. One might say, well, that's not effective. And, you know, it could lead some people to think my child got the vaccine and still got malaria. Well, vaccines don't work. And that's just simply untrue in this case. Sometimes we develop vaccines that are not wholly effective. But at that point, I would say that some is better than none.
And also the only things that actually are used for kids are nets. So before this vaccine, the only thing we could actually use in order to protect children was just basically to keep them in nets.
Well, for example, the whooping cough vaccine is 69% effective. However, you know, when you take into account herd immunity, the herd immunity principle, which is that the more people that get vaccinated, the more that the general population is protected because you have the 69% effectiveness rate. So you're applying that over and over again to the more people who get vaccinated, then, you know, you really have a much higher rate of protection.
Fewer people getting sick, fewer people able to pass on those diseases.
And right. Surrounding the people who do get sick with people who are inoculated from the disease.
Right.
So after our break, we are going to be hearing about some really neat sort of campaigns to up and increase our vaccination rates in the U.S. Have you heard the news about our polio vaccine rates in the city of Seattle?
I haven't.
No.
More kids in Rwanda are vaccinated for polio than in Seattle public schools.
Wow.
Rwanda. We invaded them, right? Yes.
amongst the places.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
That's on the global military adventure tour list. Yeah.
So yeah, as a parent, I'd say that's really concerning.
And we have pockets around Western Washington, in particular, Vashon Island. Some of the schools in Seattle, certain elementary schools, have vaccination rates in elementary schools that are lower than 50%. 50% of kids being under vaccinated, not on schedule, entering kindergarten without any immunity to things like measles, which have had outbreaks across daycares and across different.
And whooping cough. And,
yeah, pertussis. Yeah. We've had infant deaths in Washington state due to pertussis.
Right.
So a few little last words. Noel, you are a parent. You've mentioned that you're a parent and you are generally in favor of vaccinating your child and other children around your child.
Yes, I vaccinated my daughter on schedule. And while there was a lot of information out at the time about the vaccines and concerning information about the rate of vaccination, I chose to go with the CDC schedule.
And that's one of those things that you chose to do as a parent in that moment of, wow, I'm really overwhelmed. What should I do? I want to protect my kid.
Yes. I mean, when you have a baby, it's like you're scared out of your mind. So anything that is out there that's a resource that can help us is important.
I think fine words. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to Sarah Levin of the Secular Coalition for America. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844 Skeptic.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And joining us now is Sarah Levin. She's the legislative associate at the Secular Coalition for America, where she oversees the Secular Coalition state chapter program. She works to empower activists to lobby elected officials on church-state separation, evidence-based policy, and respect for secular Americans. How you doing today, Sarah?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today, Sam.
Sarah, one of the reasons we're so excited to have you on is that you've recently launched the Put Kids First campaign with the Secular Coalition for America. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Absolutely. So the Put Kids First campaign is a legislative initiative to eliminate all non-medical exemptions for vaccine laws state by state. So right now, 47 states and Washington, D.C. all have non-medical exemptions on the books. Now, some of those are religious exemptions. Some of them are personal belief, or they might be called philosophical exemptions, and some have both. And that's really scary because what we're starting to see is outbreaks of diseases like measles that were almost entirely eradicated. But what's happened is that the number of people who are claiming these non-medical exemptions have increased. And now we're seeing a comeback of these diseases. And our chapter in California, the Secular Coalition for California, was very, very active in the recent victory in California of passing SB 277. The governor signed it on June 30th. Making California only the third state in the United States with no non-medical exemptions on the books. So we're really trying to ride that momentum and achieve this in other states, because the truth is vaccine-preventable diseases, they don't know state borders. So we really need to protect all of us, and we need to put safety, especially of children who are some of the most vulnerable parts of our population affected by these exemptions, and put them and their safety before personal beliefs that are not based in any evidence.
You know, Sarah, there's some really robust voting blocks like Orange County that have, or I guess had at this point, very high vaccine exemption rates. And in light of that, how do you think the bill in California ended up being so successful?
I think the bill was successful because the coalition of people who were trying to get it passed was so varied, and it made up of the more trusted and credible parts of the community. I think the medical establishment was very, very key in passing it. So there were school nurses involved, pediatricians, the people who are actually the experts on public health. In these districts that you're talking about, These are parents who are driven by myths and misinformation, and they don't have the facts on their side. It's very difficult for them to face up to pediatricians and doctors who know what they're talking about. They went to school for this. And then I think the partnership of the medical establishment with parents who are very, very concerned about these outbreaks, because there are, as I mentioned, there are people in our population, especially children, who have medical reasons for not being able to be vaccinated. For example, a child who's younger than 12 months can't get certain vaccines. So a parent who has an infant in California would, you know, share their story, and it would be so compelling to say, I'm afraid to take my baby, you know, to the playground because there's so many people who are unvaccinated and I don't want them to get infected. So I think it was, I think we passed SB 277 because, first of all, I mean, the science is on our side, but I think it was really the mobilizing of parents and the medical establishment and also, you know, the secular community as well.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to the misinformation that's out there because this is Noelle. As a parent, we get bombarded with so many different articles and in mothers groups on Facebook and things like that. People can post anything, and it's very difficult to tell what's real science and what's not. And then when you have a new baby that you're responsible for, and like I said, you're kind of scared out of your mind that something's going to happen to this little thing that you're completely responsible for. And so I think it's great that the SCA is kind of helping people to sort through what the misinformation is and what's out there that's really important to pay attention to.
You know, we have stressed the importance and efficacy and safety of vaccines before on this show. From the Secular Coalition's perspective, why is this a concern to secularists?
That's a great question. So we advocate for separation of church and state, and we also advocate for evidence-based policy. And the bottom line is that the evidence shows that vaccines work and vaccines save lives. Just to give you a number to demonstrate that, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, estimate that in the 20 years since the Vaccine for Children program was implemented, 732,000 deaths from measles were prevented, as well as over 21 million hospitalizations. Now, that's just measles, and there are a whole host of vaccines that are included in the CDC's vaccine schedule. So you can just imagine, if those are the numbers for measles, imagine how many lives we've saved and hospitalizations we've prevented with vaccines. And so this is really an issue of recognizing the science. This really should be a non-issue. This is being treated as a controversial debate, but there is no debate over whether vaccines work. They do work. And the very, very rare and minor risks are far outweighed by the benefits. And so the Secular Coalition is involved in this because this is a case of religious beliefs and personal beliefs being privileged above the safety of our population and of children. And when it comes to policy, we have to draw the line, and we do draw the line as a society. We draw the line for religious liberty when it comes to harm. If you're free to exercise your personal and religious beliefs as much as you want until you harm other people. And we do have a history of doing that. So, for example, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Prince v. Massachusetts that parents' religious beliefs do not give them a constitutional right to engage in practices that compromise a child's health or safety. So this is, for us, this is an issue of making sure that our policies that are so important because they protect public health and the most vulnerable parts of our population, we have to make sure those policies are evidence-based.
That's, yeah, and it's one of the things that we were talking about actually when we were reading up on the program that you're doing earlier, and in, also in the pre-show, that there's actually very little objection to the use of vaccines or to vaccination on the part of organized religion. In fact, there are vaccines that contain material from pigs, organic material from pigs, that would, to a layperson perhaps, or to a casual observer, present an objection from Muslim or from Jewish practitioners or Jewish believers, but leaders in the Muslim faith and leaders in the Jewish faith have both come out saying that the way the the benefits to the child and the benefits to public health outweigh those religious objections. And so it's interesting that the secular component to that is that there is no significant religious objection to these things. So the vast majority of these objections are, quote, philosophical or personal.
Right. And I do find that very interesting. Even if in these states where there are no religious exemption, there are just philosophical exemption, it's an issue of policy not being driven by science and evidence. We cannot allow beliefs, whether they are religious or not, to harm other people. Because the fact is, when you choose not to vaccinate your child, you're taking away that choice from a parent who doesn't have that choice because their child has a medical reason that makes them ineligible for vaccines. So really, this issue comes down not so much to church-state separation, but to making sure that our policies are based on sound science and evidence.
So you and I know that there's no scientific objection to vaccines. But I still receive emails of people who are asking me, you know, why should I take vaccines because they have all these problems and the whole continuing, basically just invention of side effects for these things. How is the SEA hoping to counter that when they encounter it while they're talking about this?
Right. So we have, we will have information out there. I mean, there's a lot of arguments that are put out there from, you know, saying that that vaccines themselves are dangerous or that the side effects are dangerous. As far as the one you mentioned with reactions, I mean, like any medication, vaccines can have side effects, but most are mild, like redness or soreness at the injection site. And serious side effects are very, very rare. In fact, you are more likely to get struck by lightning than to have a severe vaccine reaction, just to give it some perspective. But that's the reaction. That's just one of many of the arguments they're putting out there. As you probably know, they also claim that vaccines cause autism. That's been debunked multiple times. So we are prepared, and our state chapter leaders are going to be informed of what they're going to come up against, and they'll have the materials they need. But generally, we're going to be deferring to the experts because the experts are our trusted leading medical establishments, such as the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the CDC, which actually sets the vaccine schedules. And so we don't have to be the experts on this issue. We have a ton of information out there with in the medical establishment about why vaccines are safe and what the actual risks are and how they compare to the benefits. For us, what we really need to do is build coalitions with those partners and mobilize our own community and our allies to speak up about the issue, because the Secular Coalition is an advocacy organization. We advocate and we train local secular activists how to speak up, because the problem right now is that this issue has broad public support, but we are a silent majority, and the anti-vaccine movement is a very vocal minority. So if we are able to just mobilize the people who know that vaccines are safe and know that the non-medical exemptions are very, very dangerous, and work with the experts in the field, then I think we're going to be able to win this fight.
I think it's important to note, and I'll be talking about this for as long as we keep talking about this, is that the idea that there are negative reactions to vaccines is actually an argument for why widespread vaccination is necessary. I've a couple of times now I've had a conversation where somebody was like, yeah, I got a vaccine and I can't take them. Vaccines are terrible. Nobody should. And I'm like, well, no, actually, we all should, so that our vaccinations, our immune systems, aren't carriers for this disease that you are not protected from. And that's incredibly important. Is everybody's talking about this as a personal issue, as I'm putting something in my body. But there's people completely ignore the community issue until we start throwing words around like epidemic.
Yeah, I really think that it's a social responsibility issue. Those of us who can get vaccines should get vaccines to protect the people who have problems with the vaccines.
So, Sarah, you were talking about this as a state-by-state action. What are the states that you were targeting with this Put Kids First campaign?
Oh, that's a great question. So I will list them off. I had a little list in front of me. There we go. We're going to be targeting 10 states, and those are Illinois, Maine, Michigan, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Washington. But all of our state chapters are going to be involved. There was our own selection process for why these 10. But we do have more than 10 state chapters that will be working on this. And if anybody listening out there, if you want to get involved in your state, you can just email putkidsfirst@secular.org. If you get together a strong coalition, you can be the next campaign state.
So what is that structure for the state level action? You had something about grassroots and grass tops. Those are that grass tops is an intriguing phrase. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So our state chapter leaders are trained to lobby their legislators. So they we work with them to learn how to write the language that you write for an action alert, how to talk about the issues, how to contact their legislator, how to schedule a meeting, how to run an in-person meeting, what you say when you make a phone call to a legislator, how you find key partners and allies to build a coalition. So in any kind of grassroots movement on an issue, you have the people who are dealing directly with the legislative offices, identifying, okay, who sponsored this bill? Who would sponsor this bill? Who would co-sponsor this bill based on how they voted in the past, based on what committee they're part of? Those are the kinds of things that our chapter leaders do and that we work with them to do, and we train. And these are everyday people who just emailed the Secular Coalition one day or called us at the office and said, I want to get involved and I want to impact the policies of my state legislature. How do I do that? And we work with them so that they become the experts, the eyes and the ears on the ground in their own state. So that's the kind of things that they're doing. And then the grassroots is really about, if one person is calling the legislator, that's one thing. But when a chapter leader calls an office and says, you have a lot of constituents in your district that want this to be passed, then what needs to happen is the grassroots activating. An action alert goes out that day, call this legislator and tell them you support it. And that's when we need the grassroots to back up what we're saying. Because when you go to a legislator and you say, I represent X percent of secular constituents of yours, you have to be able to back that up. And that's why the grassroots is so key in any campaign. You need to be able to show that we're not a silent majority. And I'll use Oregon as an example of why this is so important. So there was a state senator who introduced a bill that would repeal Oregon's non-medical exemptions. And the anti-vaccine movement was so strong in their backlash. They were so loud that the senator, who, by the way, is, I believe, a physician, just retracted the bill altogether and just went for a different bill that would have just restricted and tightened the rules a little bit. But that's a great example of something that we can't have happen again, because the majority of people would have supported that bill, but they weren't as vocal. They weren't showing up with, protest posters at the state capitol. They weren't flooding her office with phone calls and emails. We have to be able to match that. And the thing is, we have the numbers, and not just in the secular community, but we have broad public support for this issue. So the grassroots really comes in when we need to show these legislators that when they take the lead to repeal non-medical exemptions, they have backup. We have their back. They're not going to lose their seats. They're not going to, we have to show them that we can minimize the political risk for them by just showing up and speaking out.
Sarah, I'm curious, does the campaign have any sample legislation that you use?
We will have sample legislation. Yes.
So I'm curious of whether that varies from state to state. One of the reasons is because is the campaign sort of accounting for logistical or funding differences between states?
It will vary state by state. We'll have model legislation that will be adapted by state. And in fact, some, if not most of the campaign states already have bills that we could support. So in some states, it's just going to be a matter of contacting those offices and working with them to mobilize the support they'll need, because most state legislatures are out of session at the moment. So the legislative side of things will really be ramped up in 2016, and we're laying the groundwork now. But for the bills we would support, it's just a matter of building a strong coalition so that when the legislative season is back, we have the grassroots we need to activate to get it through, and make sure that they don't get scared off and retract the bill altogether, like what happened in Oregon. In some states, there have been bills that are kind of the middle ground. They don't repeal the non-medical exemptions, but they might, you know, add something that makes it a little more difficult to claim the exemption. So what we'd be doing there is seeing if we can find reach out to those sponsors and say, hey, you know, we would work with you if you'll make this bill stronger, if you'll introduce a stronger bill.
So one of the states that you're targeting is Washington, and that just happens to be the state we're in. But we also know that it has one of the most permissive vaccination laws in as much as getting out of vaccination as anywhere in the nation. What specifically are you looking to target? Is there anything different about Washington, given its odd legal structure?
So this is a really good example of where our state chapters play such an important role in our strategy, because they know their states the best. There will be a very tailored approach to every state, and our state chapters know their states best. So a lot of times when I'm looking into that kind of stuff, that's the kind of thing that our chapter leaders will do is look, do a little further digging and see, okay, what do we need to do in Washington to get this done, as opposed to what do we need to do in Oregon to get this done? Because I'm one person, I'm overseeing all of our chapters in all of the states. So we really rely actually on our chapter leaders as constituents who know their legislators, who know their government to work with us and give us a little more insight on the ground as to how we can best tailor things, which is actually one of the things I love the most about working with chapter leaders is I learn new things all the time. While all I really need to do is empower them to talk to their legislators, and the rest is up to them.
Well, I think here's one thing that's kind of concerning about Washington State. The California bill says all children to be enrolled in school have to be vaccinated. And that's sort of how these bills sort of are structured. And that's the biggest way of getting at the most kids, basically, the most young people, is through the public school system. Well, in states where, say, October 1st is your cutoff date for determining school enrollment, which then determines a school's funding or a school district's funding, there's a huge impetus to keep kids in those chairs on those days. So to have a competing bill that say, hey, if your vaccination records are not up to date, exemption or no exemption, at that point, there's no incentive to keep them home from school, even if that's technically the law, because it's in direct contradiction with how a school or a district will be funded. Looking at Washington State right now, that is having court battles over funding at the state level to begin with. And I say this as a school teacher. Those the kinds of things that are pitted one against the other. Looking at public access to vaccines, if suddenly you say all kindergartners need to be vaccinated and have their records up to date, are states providing that infrastructure through their health departments to provide access to those kinds of things? Really complex issues that I imagine would vary state to state. Now, Noelle, you had a comment or question?
Well, I was interested in what the Put Kids First campaign is doing to reach out to parents and how educating parents, especially during that time when you have a new baby and you're kind of flooded with all this information and you might not know where to turn to. What is there anything that you guys are doing to reach out to parents to educate the public in general about this? Or is it mostly just reaching out to legislators?
That's a great question. So one organization that we've been working with and we've been promoting what they're doing is Voices for Vaccines, which is a parent advocacy network. And we are encouraging parents to join vaccine play groups, which I think is an incredible program by Voices for Vaccines, which empowers local parents to start play groups. It's exactly how it sounds, play groups for vaccinated children, which I imagine would be especially important in places like Washington, where you really don't know who your kid is coming into contact with. So it really gives you peace of mind to know that you can go to a place and have your child play with other children and know that all the children in that group are vaccinated. And I think that's a natural place for parents to actually get active as parents who are pro-vaccine, to start talking about, okay, you know, it's great that we have peace of mind here in this playgroup, but really, we shouldn't even have to do this in the first place. So what can we do to get more involved to make sure that all the kids who can be vaccinated are vaccinated? So we're promoting Voices for Vaccines, vaccine playgroups. And we're also really encouraging parents to speak up, especially if they are what I call at-risk parents, the ones who have children who are too young to be vaccinated or have children who have medical reasons for being ineligible for vaccines, to speak up, because those stories are really important to get out there. When you can bring a parent who is personally, I mean, everyone is personally affected, but a parent like that is especially affected. If you can get them into a room when you're meeting with legislators, if you can bring them to testify at a hearing on a bill, if you can get them to make a phone call to their legislator and say, I'm a parent that has a child that's too young to be vaccinated. I urge you, please, to keep my child safe by repealing the non-medical exemption. I think that alone, as one story, is much more compelling than 15 calls from anti-vaxxers talking about misinformation. So what we're doing is we're encouraging those parents specifically to speak up and share their story, because their stories are very, very compelling. And those are the kinds of stories that can really make or break it when it comes to convincing a legislator to sponsor a bill.
Yeah, it sounds like that could be really powerful.
You know, an important part of this is that you are doing a month-long fundraiser. How would people contribute to this fundraiser, and what do those funds support?
So you can go to secular.org/putkidsfirst. And you'll find the donate page. And so a lot of resources go into this kind of campaign, things like sending activists to the state capitol so that they can lobby their legislators. If you have, say there's a really key district that has a really low immunization rate and you have a great group of volunteers there who are willing to go in person and do a lobby day, for example, but it's a few hours away. We want to make sure we can get them to that state capitol and show that legislator that they have constituents in their district who are supporting this initiative. So really, it supports the lobbying efforts. You know, a lot of resources go into it, you know, making sure that we have materials to provide to legislators that give them the information they need, both on vaccines generally and also about non-medical exemptions and why they're harmful. A lot of research and materials go into that, and we want to bring professional accurate information to the legislators and their offices so they can use those as a reference. So those are just a few examples of things that your funds will support.
Great. So if people want to get involved on the state level, if they want to find out where their local chapter is and become a part of this process, where would I send them?
Great question. On Put Kids First, secular.org/putkidsfirst, you'll see a map of the United States, and you can click on your state and it'll take you to your state page. And that's where you'll find contact information for your local state chapter and action items that you can take. A few things you can do is you can sign up for vaccine action alerts, and you probably won't get a lot until a few months from now when the state legislatures actually open up, but it'll be important to be signed up because those action alerts are the grassroots part of it that I talked about before. If anybody listening to this call has ever gotten an action alert where it says, contact your legislator, I want you to know that that does not go in a vacuum. There is someone in that office, if not the legislator themselves, who are basically, especially if it's a hot issue that they're getting a lot of emails, they're basically doing a tally mark of how many emails they're getting.
Yeah.
So having 50 emails as opposed to 5 is important. So if you think you're clicking that button and filling out your information is not important, that's not true at all. It makes all the difference in the world. So you can sign up for vaccine action alerts and pay attention to your inbox. So when you see an action alert, just know that it's very, very impactful to do those actions. So there's the vaccine action alerts. speaking up, sharing your story, talk about this, make this a visible issue, tell others about the campaign. When people are talking about vaccines, you know, talk about non-medical exemptions. Not everyone necessarily knows that they exist or that they're a problem. And sharing your story. If you have a story to share, especially if you're a parent and if you're a parent that has a young child or a child with a medical reason for not getting vaccinated, please email putkidsfirst@secular.org and share your story. If you're a medical professional, especially if you work with children, if you're a pediatrician and you have a patient who has a medical reason for not getting vaccinated, or if you've treated a child with a vaccine-preventable disease, if you're a family physician, any kind of medical professional, but especially if you have a story to share about vaccines, please email putkidsfirstandsecular.org. Tell us where you're from, your city or state, why this is important to you, and share your story. Because, like I said before, this really is important and fits into the campaign because we need to present those stories, those compelling stories, to legislators. Don't forget that legislators are people, you know, they're human. They have emotions. They are very impacted by personal, compelling stories, especially the people who are most affected. So if you have a story to share, please share your story. Sign up for Vaccine Action Alerts. And please, if you can, give what you can to the Put Kids First campaign.
Sarah Levin is the Legislative Associate at the Secular Coalition for America, where she oversees the Secular Coalition State Chapter Program. She's with us today to talk about their up-and-coming vaccine program. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to catch up on some user emails. I can't take the programmer out of me, I guess. We're going to listener emails. I mean, listener memes.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. There's been a lot of stuff in this interview, but I think we're going to take a shift down a little bit. And yeah, I'm back. I'm still hosting. I got out of the studio for 5 whole minutes. It was glorious. But we do have an email, and this comes to us from Linda from South Milwaukee. Hey. And she writes us to us, I'll keep it short and sweet. More Ron John. He's smart, funny, and I always look forward to the episodes he's on.
Linda, this episode is for you.
Ron John?
Are you kidding me?
No.
This is why you couldn't tell me about this email?
Yes.
Are you? Linda, I am your biggest fan. Wow. I'm truly touched. I don't think I've ever received fan mail. That's amazing.
You have fan mail.
Well, to Yay! Be fair, I don't know that you received fan mail, but R-O-N-J-O-N received fan mail.
Oh, yeah, you gotta do that, Tom.
Oh, come on. Linda, really? Completely excused. You can spell my name however you want. It's a radio show. No one knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could totally go into, wow, you don't look like the way you sound territory. I love that.
Well, actually, this is worth asking. Like, it does mean that people can tell the difference between your voice and my voice on the air.
Yes.
If we have definitive proof.
We have proof now.
Right.
Actually, I've already heard from a couple people that says, yeah, you guys sound the same.
Or maybe she just likes Sam's alter ego.
Right.
Maybe we need to take a tally and like a legislative assistant or whatever.
We need a vote. Yes.
Let's call Pew. Let's get this done.
Yes. Contact your Ask an Atheist representative. And this is action alert sent to you.
Yes. This is great. My head is growing bigger. The earphones don't even fit anymore.
Yeah, Linda, you're doing a very dangerous thing. I know this guy. I know where this goes.
This is truly, I'm you were holding this back. You were being so cagey about this email. I'm not going to show it to you. I'm hiding it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Linda, and thank you very much, Sam, and Becky for hiding it from me. This is
what you think I did this for you? It's good radio.
Well, there is that. Right, exactly. We've captured the moment. We gotta get the surprise faces for the surprise.
You're looking at the guy who basically did his marriage through the radio at this point. I mean, yeah, I'll do anything to get a listener at this point.
Can't argue with that.
It was a great surprise face too.
Yeah. Kinda wish I had a camera. Wheaton College has announced that it will stop offering health insurance to students due to the birth control mandated the Affordable Care Act. The Christian College's refusal to offer coverage will leave about a quarter of its 3,000 students without insurance. Though the ACA allows religious organizations to opt out of the birth control mandate, the school still sees signing the form to opt out as taking part in a system they find morally objectionable. The college has announced it will provide hardship funding to some students who are losing insurance coverage.
So instead of saying we're going to give all of these students health care, we want to make sure that they're well taken care of, that they can survive the rigor and demand of college, of living away from home, we're going to say no, poo poo, lest you possibly receive birth control paid for by someone not even us.
Well, this is our this is not too far away from where we grew up.
Yeah, actually, Wheaton College is in Wheaton, Illinois, and it is one of the near sort of middle suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, and it's got kind of a reputation. There's some really smart, actually not horrible theologians that came out of Wheaton.
Right.
I think Fred Clark, the guy who does Slacktivist, who I actually really like, I think went to Wheaton. But it's also known for a few of the.
Well, so the Wheaton College student conduct code requires that no students at the school have sex outside of wedlock. So they have to be married in order to have sex. If they're having sex and they're not, then they'll be expelled. It's interesting that this story also includes the little side note, which is that the Wheaton College faculty and staff continue to receive ACA-compliant healthcare coverage as an employer. And so while the students, Wheaton College's choice to deny birth control and deny reproductive health access to their students by simply removing healthcare entirely, basically saying, well, if we're not going to be, we are no longer involved in healthcare, because if we are involved in healthcare, we have to be involved in reproductive health. That's not a decision that they're making on the front end of their business. It's only a decision they're making on the back end of their business.
So this is more about, clearly, it's more about posturing than it is about anything else.
Yeah. So is there anything consistent in this these moves they're pulling?
Not even in this one. I mean, I have to say, this idea that raising your hand to say that you're religious and therefore you have a belief and that belief requires you to take certain stands, that actually strikes me as a raising your hand and saying, this is my belief. This is how I feel that belief affects me. This is how that belief is going to drive me to behave in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
That actually strikes me as extraordinarily Christian.
Yeah.
The fact that raising your hand and stating your belief and stating its impact is somehow un-Christian is actually quite strikingly weird from a fundamentalist organization like Wheaton, who is voicing its religion left and right all over the place. Suddenly speaking up is a problem?
That was my curiosity about this, is wouldn't signing that form be your opportunity to be a part of the Great Commission? I mean,
right. Isn't this a shibboleth? Like checking the box and saying, "Yeah, I'm a devout believer, and it's right here."
I'm pretty sure the religious algorithm here is you sign the form, you fill the form out, and you send it in, and then you spend the next 20 years talking about how you're persecuted because you had to sign a form.
Right.
That is. I'm pretty sure that's the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
All I can think about is writing a nasty letter to Will Wheaton about his college.
Yeah. It, you know what? It took me a while to figure out that Will Wheaton was, like, not recently, like when I was a kid, that Will Wheaton was a person. I just thought they were talking about the town. Like, Will Wheaton, what is it, like a restaurant or a bar?
What will Wheaton do?
What would Will Wheaton do?
What would Will Wheaton do?
I think it bears saying.
What would Will Wheaton, Walt Whitman?
Or clarifying that Will Wheaton has nothing to do with denying birth control to people.
or Wheaton College, I'm reasonably certain. Yeah, doesn't strike me as
As far as I know.
Yeah.
This segment has not been endorsed by Will Wheaton or the Will Wheaton Foundation.
No.
There is no Will Wheaton. I don't even know if there's a Will Wheaton Foundation. I just said that in that voice.
Nope.
Linda, it's all your fault.
Yeah, you're kind of still a little bit
still riding the
wave. Still
riding the wave.
Yeah. The Federal Bureau. Let me try that in English. The Federal Bureau of Prisons reached a settlement with the American Humanist Association that guarantees recognition of humanism as a belief system. A lawsuit, which was filed in the name of Oregon inmate Jason Holden, alleged that Holden wasn't allowed to access the same privileges of other inmates because the prison didn't recognize humanism as a belief system. According to the settlement, Holden will be allowed to form study groups, spend 1 hour in observance every week, and also observe Darwin Day as an official holiday.
So this is really cool. We actually covered the lawsuit maybe about a year ago, whatever. And it's saying, hey, look, humanism, no, secular humanism is not a religion in that it believes in anything supernatural, but it is a world view. It is a perspective. It is a belief system about how to guide and orient your life.
Yeah.
And it's important that people who believe humanist values get the access to the same things that other people get is the key thing, I think, in this.
Prisoners included.
Right.
I'm not going to believe it until we can actually see that starting to be cited in parole hearings. Well, you know, I am rehabilitated. I embraced myself.
Yeah.
As my personal savior.
I wore a colander. Clearly, right. I have converted.
Exactly.
I don't know whether that would gain recognition as official headwear, colander, Church of Flying Spaghetti Monster.
They're pretty. I'm pretty sure they won't let you wear a metal colander on your
shave
head.
Shave your
prison.
Pasta.
Yeah. I used to complain about Darwin Day because it felt kind of weird because, like, oh, we're celebrating a person and it's all about Darwin. But I've kind of come around.
Aren't all the holidays pretty much celebrating?
That's kind of my problem. I kind of have a philosophical opposition to it. But I did.
And it's a real person. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing about celebrating Darwin Day for me is that I feel like it's a birthday.
Yeah. Right?
And that's fine.
Okay.
But celebrating Darwin Day means we have to celebrate everything about Darwin. And there probably are some handful of things that we don't really want.
Well, that was always it, is you know, high pedestals and whatever. But honestly, we need a holiday. And it's just as nice as any other. I mean, it's cool. It's
Festivus.
Science-y. What?
Festivus, Freethinker's Day.
Festivus is more of a Seinfeld fan thing, I thought. Yes, yeah. Becky?
Well, a really cool thing about the Darwin Day proclamations that have been issued at the state and at local levels is that it's using Darwin's birthday as a way to recognize the advance of science, the advance of understanding the theory of evolution, as a huge, impactful, significant event in human history. I mean, without understanding the theory of evolution, we wouldn't have antibiotics that we do. We probably wouldn't have the ability to develop organisms that can interact with the environment in certain awesome ways. I mean, it's more of a recognition of science and less of that celebration of the man.
And that's all the time we have for today. My name is Sam. With me was Noel, Becky, and Ranjan. You can go to askanatheist.tv, email us at questions at askanatheist.tv, Twitter us at askanatheistwa, telegraph poles? I don't know.
Shout out your window.
See you guys next week.